K2 Romeo India Whiskey is my name. And my call, my name is Dick. And you're also going to be hearing K2 Kilo Echo Yankee. His name is Mel. Mel and Dick, on Sunday evenings, for a lot of years now, we gather the clan of ham radio operators to discuss how all this stuff works. We teach each other. It's usually an educational experience. Occasionally a little bit of entertainment sneaks in. There's a lot to these 25 or 26 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter FM ham radio, which you're listening to right now, is just one of the 26 kinds. And if it doesn't quite please you, before you give up the hobby, consider trying one of the other 25. And they're all connected usually by wireless technology, computers, microprocessors, antennas, transmission lines, display devices, aeronautical devices, and so on. There's a lot to the hobby. A person signs into the technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters and your name. Try to remember the name because I'm kind of forgetful. And you're going to follow that with the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. If you're just listening, you need not sign in and tell us that because after 27 years, we sort of believe that there are people out there in the tri-state area listening to the TechNet. We're about to find out if there's anybody interested in ham radio and not completely enthralled to the Super Bowl. So are there any non-Super Bowl people out there? Make your presence known by giving us your call letters and your name, particularly if you've got a question or a comment for the net. K2RIW, listening.
And to XJN, Wesley, yes.
WQIW, Bob, with no comment.
WS2N, with a quick space report.
Good evening all, K2KEY.
KC2FCP, please, no question.
KD1THM, Brandon, and I got something to just tell everyone. Thought they might be interested.
KA2RAY, yes.
2RSO, Frank, no questions.
WA2RAY, yes.
So far we've got Wesley, Paul, Steve with a no, Mel, Brandon, Joe, Frank with a no. If I've missed anyone, let me know. Is there anyone else to sign into the TechNet with a question or a comment? Please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes. K2RIW, listening.
K-E-S-E-S. Will you do ILP, Bob, Robo Baker? No comment.
Ed, something like EJE. Please give me your full call letters again, Ed.
K2 Golf Juliet Echo, Ed.
Golf Juliet Echo. A little bit noisy, but we're going to be able to pull you out of there. Golf Juliet Echo, Ed. Okay. All right, the first person who signed in was Wesley. N2XJN. Go right ahead, Wesley. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is November to X-ray Juliet November. My wife is bringing me great coffee, so it's a little bit noisy right now. Now, could you please tell me if my modulation is okay before I start?
Your modulation is just about right. Go right ahead, Wesley.
K2RFS.
Okay. In the last TechNet, I was trying to pick up the subject of perpetual motion over unity, but because I do not want the listeners to get bored with that, I have something new. I would like to pick up the subject of HHO, which is being known also as a brown gas, and this one is being blamed for another movement of the people towards free energy, which is actually using water to heat your houses and using water eventually to instead of gasoline in your cars. 1971, Dr. Brown found very rare gas, which contains hydrogen and oxygen through the electrolysis. So actually you put the water into a container, you put a baking soda in it, and then with the fraction of 1 second, or even less than a second, you see the accumulating gas. Now the gas has the temperature of burning with the features of thermonuclear reaction, which is actually 1500 degrees. And this can easily weld, and it can easily destroy the aluminium. As far as copper, it requires, I believe, a little bit more energy to do the harm to it. Anyhow, when you cover, now this gas actually turns from that is from the water, it turns to the gas. After it burns, turns to the water, and the HHO have been chemically altered the fuel, lowering its surface tension for a better dispersion. HHO also helps the fuel to burn more completely than other fuels due to the extra highly combustive gases. HHO itself burns in the combustion chamber. You can also put HHO under the water with the flame, it will burn under the water. And HHO burns, turns the water to the to the water or to the steam, expanding 1600 times. Now back to you, Dick. What is that you would like to say about it?
I'm not very familiar with this one. I do know I've seen a couple of YouTube videos of a person who takes water, puts it through some kind of a process by which it becomes a fuel. And it's not just a simple electrolysis. A number of us have heard of the experiment where you pass a current through water. You've got two terminals in the water, and as the current passes through the water, oxygen is released from one of the terminals, and hydrogen is released from the other, and you get twice as much hydrogen as oxygen, because water does have a symbol of H2O, which also could be represented as HHO. I'm a little bit curious as to what is the difference between HHO and H2O, but the oxygen and hydrogen you get out of the electrolysis process, you could then burn it and turn it back into water. You're putting quite a bit of chemical energy, quite a bit of electrical energy into the electrolysis process, and in theory you get that energy back again when you burn it, turning it back into H2O. Hydrogen and oxygen, when they burn, give you water vapor, which eventually, when you condense it, becomes water itself. So that is a somewhat reversible process. Now I wonder if this brown gas, HHO, how does it differ? And what website can we go to where we could read more about this one? How did you first come upon it, Wesley? N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is N2XJN. Well, first I'm going to give you the brief information about everything, and then I would go to the specifics. Well, first, there was the Dr. Brown that you can put into the Google. You should find him, and HHO. Well, the HHO, H2O, H2O is a water. HHO is two, three atoms of H and one of O, which H is hydrogen and O is oxygen. Now, you can very easily create a fuel for your car with that, although some of the people were trying to use that fuel not for the car, but for the electrical generator. What they did is actually in the intake of that engine, where the air is coming in, let me stop for a moment, they drill a small hole. It's a hose. Then they put half an inch diameter of the hose, plastic hose, that comes from the cell. The cell is very easy to do. You can make the cell with the cost of less than $10. All you got to do is you put, for the better efficiency, you put two tubes, one outer tube and then one inside. These tubes are isolated in between themselves by the spacers. Now, you put that tube into the water. Now, one tube is connected to minus and the other one is to positive of the battery. Let's say car battery. And it approximately takes 1.2 amps from each cell. You can construct it different way. You can actually make this cell done with spirals, like a coil. You make two coils. These coils are exactly the same in diameter, but they are in by an angle from themselves. That means they are on the same core. They could be on the same core, but they don't touch each other. It's like one coil is in the middle of the other, but they are separated between themselves. And then you put plus and minus to each one of the coils. Then, within approximately 1 to 3 seconds, you see the accumulating gas. The gas is not harmful to the lungs and to the people. It's a gas and oxygen and hydrogen. And when you just cover that with the cover, it could be the plastic cover, and then you put the hose from the plastic. At the end of that, you put kind of metal pipe or something that you can actually put your lighter and you can light it. The temperature is absolutely high, but does not heat that piece of pipe because the temperature condensation is outside. Now, if you put this kind of gas into the in-house of your motor, try to experiment with the small portable generators, electrical generators with the small motors, you're going to see that it's going to work. And this is not like I was talking about before. I was talking about over-unit in perpetual motion with neodymium magnets, which is kind of being put in doubt. This one is not put in doubt. This thing exists. But conspiracy theory, I could actually see something in it, even though that I'm against any conspiracy theory. There was a person who was called Stanley Mayer. He's got a patent in 90s for motor that does not use electrolyte. It used pure water without baking soda in it. And he was actually using generator trying to have a pulse cells. It was generating about 200 pulses per minute, which is not much, up to 1,000 hertz. Then, by varying this frequency, he was able, at least he claimed in it, he was able to turn molecules of water into dividing to HHO. Let me drop for a moment. of a sudden, in 1998, Mr. Stanley Mayer died. And he was poisoned, or he poisoned himself. Whatever happened to him, doesn't matter. The matter is that I recall from 1960s in Poland, the Polish inventor who was able to build the car running on water. Everybody knows it. It is not the United States in America. You can hide something. No. Over there, once something is allowed, you cannot hide it. People know each other. Word of mouth in communist regime was actually very much a strong tool. This person disappeared. Nobody heard about him any longer. Now, whether this is true or this is not true, I'm not claiming anything, but I say that this is not in interest of the government. To have a car water or water, doesn't matter if it's true or it's not true. Or for the people to create their own electricity using water as HHO gas, or heating their own houses, or maybe not paying for even the gas for their stove, anything like that. Question then is, when is that gonna evolve? There is a Korean company, the company name is, just a moment, where did I put it? They make a brown gas generator, RS-300. And the company name is BEST, like Best, Korea Co. Ltd. And they manufacture right now the brown gas generators. There is another company in Japan which actually started manufacturing heaters, home heaters, operating on water. Okay, that's for now. Back to you, Dick, and to XJS.
So I've got two questions for you, Wesley. You're putting energy into the system in the form of electrical current into the water, maybe containing another substance, to give off the gas. The gas itself, then you're using in some form of a combustion-like process, in order to get energy back out. Do you have reason to believe that the energy you get back out is greater than the electrical energy you put in? And is there a website where we could go to read more about this? Do you know of a particular website? And is that how you...
Please comment.
And how you first found out about it. Wesley first... N2XJN, K2LIW.
Okay, there are various numbers of web pages about it. What I want to find is something that is reliable, because there are many myths around that technology. Some people say this is completely untrue and it is not working. Well, the gas brown gas works. And brown gas gives the temperature. But then, do I say that the energy that is manufactured by the gas, either in kinetical form or any other form, is greater than delivered one? No, I do not. I'm just too fresh in this subject, so I cannot claim anything. But when Japanese starts to manufacture heaters for the house based on water, and when Koreans start to make the cells, and I have another gentleman who would like to meet with you if you only want to. If you want to go to Maine, he also makes the cells, and he said no secrets, he can show it everything to you and discuss. And he's experimenting also with that long time, and he was actually trying to make the Stanley Mayer invention work, which is no electrolyte, no baking soda inside. Back to you, Dick, and to XJM.
W2RLP comment.
W2RLP, I think it is. Correct me on your call letters, give us your name, and go right ahead with your comment.
This is W2ILP, Dick. The handle is Bob Baker, Robo Baker. And John Tanzius K3TUP had done extensive experiments in exactly the same thing that was mentioned, and what he found was it took more energy to get the phenomena that water leaking out of water phenomena takes more energy than it can produce. Electrical energy, as you pointed out, John Kanzius, K3TUP, was featured on 60 Minutes on two different programs, one before he died and one after he died. He was trying to find a cure for cancer using radio frequencies, and it turned out that the research is still going on, trying to put gold nanoparticles into the cells so they could radiate them and heat them without killing the good cells. But Kanzius is now a silent key, and if you look him up on Google him up, you'll find out about his experimentation, which is exactly what was described. Back to you, Dick, W2, India, Luna, Papa.
Thank you for that information, Bob. So, apparently when K3TUP did his testing of this brown gas system, he did not find it to have more energy output than input, and as such, its value from his testing seems to be marginal. What I think Wesley's going to be doing, because if I know Wesley, he's going to continue investigating this, he'll eventually be telling us more about whether or not anyone is claiming more energy out than in, and he'll eventually be telling us websites by which we can look further into it. Again, I'm starting off a little skeptical. I can tell by the way Wesley is wording it, he's not quite positive yet, too, as to does this have a whole lot of value, even though Korean manufacturers and maybe some others are making hardware using the principle. So it looks to me like there's some question involved. I'm going to move on, and from time to time, I think Wesley's going to be telling us what he discovers as he continues his research. I can tell Wesley is quite interested in systems that have the potential for more energy out than in. Sure would be nice if we could find one of those, and let's find out. Hey, Tuesday. Go right ahead, Eric.
Just a couple quick little things. You remember my hydrogen project, which actually works quite well. I've got several different versions of it running now. But I would never ever claim to say that you get more energy out than you get in. I use what people like to call Brown's gas, which is electrolyzed water, hydrogen and oxygen, to help gasoline burn a little more efficiently. The energy for that, for the electrolysis, actually comes from the wasted energy within the process of burning gasoline fuel. So it actually gives you a cleaner burn in the end, you produce less pollutants, and you gain some efficiency in an engine that's really only about 20% efficient. In fact, it's a little less than 20% efficient. But, and the gentleman who is working on the cancer, unfortunately he succumbed to his cancer, but, you know, they did a demonstration where he took some water, put a little salt in it, and put his test tube in between his reactor plate, which was basically an antenna. And that was about a kilowatt of RF energy that he's working with, and it electrolyzes the water, but it's not terribly efficient. K2IW, K2, Jack.
Just quick comment for the end.
Yeah, I've got two questions for you, Eric, before we go over to Wesley, and that is, number one, what was your major motivation for doing hydrogen experiments? I guess to find out whether there's anything to it as far as significant energy out compared to what goes in. That's one area of question I've got for you. And the second area is that you probably have heard that Toyota is now possibly recalling Prius automobiles, and you own a Prius. because of a braking problem. And I wonder if you think that affects you. KE2EJ, KE2RIW.
Yeah, second answer first. No, I have a Ford Hybrid, an Escape that's getting old already. I bought it in 04, at the end of 04, it's the 05 model. The Toyota problems, as I understand it, it's simply a software issue. Most people aren't aware that the hybrids have upwards of 9 microprocessors in the car, sitting on a CAN bus, and they have to do a lot of talking. The ABS brake system is just another controller on a CAN bus, and they have some negotiating problems, from what I understand. And I would never claim, my purpose for the hydrogen experiments, if you remember, is that, and you actually got to see the truck, if you remember, we've built some electrolyzers into the vehicle, and we've sort of like made a 30% improvement in mileage. So actually the last one we did, I would say it's about a 35, almost a 40% improvement in gas mileage. So as gasoline hits $4 and $5 a gallon, then that little project becomes very worthwhile. When gasoline was over 3, a lot of people got very interested in it, and then as the gasoline prices dropped, the interest kind of waned. So, and there's a lot of folks out there on websites that you'll see some websites that say water-powered car, stuff like that. It's all, a lot of it is BS, because I've seen some of these devices, and they're not very efficient. My friend and I came up with a very, very efficient electrolyzer, and you know, if you figure it out, it takes kilowatts worth of energy to make liters worth of hydrogen, so go figure. K2RIW, K2J.
Yeah, but I'm still, if it gives you 30 to 40% increase in mileage, regardless of what the gasoline price is today, if I could day in and day out get 30% increase in mileage, what would stop you from continuing to do it, Eric? Go ahead.
Well, one of our friends is a big deal in FedEx, and he expressed a lot of interest in it, because they buy millions and millions of dollars worth of fuel. So even a 20% improvement is a big savings for them. There's nothing to stop me. There's a lot of patents that have been made over the years. Actually, the process was originated by Rudolf Diesel, of all people. So it's been around. It's a concept that's been around for a long time. It's not something new. It's just a matter of making your electrolyzer efficient, and the method in which you obtain wasted energy, which can either be in the form of heat, or if you're really smart, you do something. We have another friend who actually, he owns a company called Ida Motors, and his grandfather was the chief engineer. His grandfather, I think, was the chief engineer of the Edsel. So, no, I'm sorry, not the Edsel, but Tucker. I can get it right. So, yeah, I mean, there's value there. It's just a matter of making it so that you can deal with the environmental issues. Also, what you want to use as a catalyst is an issue. Being able to use water that comes out of the tap rather than distilled water, or even preferably deionized water, would be something like $30 a gallon. So there's a lot of issues in it. I mean, the concept is simple. Okay, Dick.
Don't forget about me.
Okay, more to follow. Go ahead, Wesley, with your closing comments.
Okay, and to exchange for the group, for the TechNet. Well, in the simple standing alone, the electrical generators, you can deliver only pure water. It means you have electrolyte. Water with the baking soda, and then you can run the engine. With the car's engines, there are two factors. The timing belt most likely to be retuned for better efficiency,
And if you don't do it, you are actually increasing power of your motor about 20%. So the better mileage comes from two points. One is that you actually use less fuel, but you have a mixture, water and a fuel. That means that water, HHO, and the fuel. And that's because you have a better combustion, then you're actually gaining the power of the motor, and that's why you're actually running smoother. One thing is for sure, that if you want to save the money, doesn't matter whether you're saving 10 cents, 20 cents, or whatever you're saving, it's still saving, it's not losing. So what's the problem for the people just to try it? There is a guy in New Jersey, I have it. I don't have right now in front of me the name. Who actually put his environmentally friendly house in 90s, and he actually said never pay again to any utilities company. What he did is he has HHO cells. He produces HHO to the big tanks that he has in his property, and then he stored it, and he says that when I need that, then I use it. Then of course he has the solar panels, and what else did he? Geonidium magnet. What I was thinking about is one simple thing. Let me drop for a moment. Energy storage. For the electrical energy produced or manufactured by the generator, when it goes to the grid, there is no storage. No storage at all. It goes to the transformer, it goes to the house, but it's no storage. How can you make the storage? Well, I was thinking about something like, there was a concept in Poland, there was a very heavy wheel, like a 10 tons wheel. 10 tons is 10,000 kilograms. Then you actually use this energy to rotate that, and the kinetical energy will actually be able to store 100 kilowatts for the period of 15 minutes. When you don't need it, you can use this kinetic energy, reverse that, and use an electrical energy. Now, how does it relate to what I was talking before? The thing is that there are many ways to store that energy or store that gas and then use it when you need it. But the thing is, doesn't matter, it's less energy producing that is using. Everything is less energy because it's the second law of conservation of energy. Second law of thermodynamics. So at least Dick is not going to tell me that he doesn't believe in it because it's not perpetual motion. How about if you put neodymium magnet motor along with that just to cover these additional expenses? Now you have a free energy. Back to you, Dick, and to XJR.
W2 OLP.
Dick? I think I just heard W2 OLP and Eric. OLP first. Start off with your name, sir.
That's ILP, India Lima Papa. I met you at the HIU, I think. You should remember me. I'm and the problem with a lot of these things is anytime you do anything, combustion engine, you have to worry about stability. There are all kinds of chemicals that could be added to gasoline, but they are not stable. In other words, the octane has to produce a certain dimensional graph of energy during the bulk of the engine, and it has to be stable. If it's unstable, it's not useful. It's more harmful than good. So anytime you add any other source of energy to a combustion engine and it's not stable, it's more harm than good. Back to you, Dick.
Sounds like Bob is giving us quite a bit of warning here. Go easy with these things. Eric's been there. He's run some vehicles on this material. So there's a man with hands-on experience, KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. K2RIW, KE2EJ, just let me point out a couple things. Is that most people don't realize that gasoline is a relatively slow-burning fuel. When we start talk about hydrogen, the combustion rates are a little bit different. It doesn't have volume for volume. It actually has less energy than a equivalent volume of gasoline to start with. But it burns at a different rate. It actually burns much faster than gasoline does. So when you start to make a mixed fuel, like say a combination of gasoline, hydrogen, or oxygen, you actually change the combustion rate, which you actually, if you're going to modify an existing car, you have to pull a computer in terms of the dwell angle. Actually what you do is you, if you're really smart about it, you take and you actually can go out and buy a racing computer which has the mapping tables already built into it, and you can modify the actual values in it. So normally a gasoline engine actually hits the spark a little bit before it gets to top dead center, because it takes the gasoline a little moment to burn and create all that vapor, you know, that expansive gas that pushes the piston down. So there's that. The other thing, Wesley, I've used different catalysts along the way. I've used potassium hydroxide, sulfuric acid, baking soda is a good one, which is safe and environmentally sound. But how you go about and separate or the reactor plates that you make or rods, however you do it, there's water that you get out of your tap, of course, isn't just water. It's a lot of other materials, and in short periods of time, if you have an electrolyzer that uses a gap that's very small, it gets clogged up, there's all sorts of funny things that happen with that. As far as you know, the stability of burning the mixed fuel, as long as you have a constant value of gas that you're generating, and it's clean and pure, you know, the controllable aspect of it in terms of making the engine burn it properly is not an issue. The technology is there for that, and you literally can go to a speed shop and buy the stuff that you need. Oh, and the other thing is that we use UPS systems, which are these huge. Leibert makes a lot of them. They're huge flywheels, and we store the kinetic energy, and of course when the power goes off, you get a power disturbance. You get a little bit of time before that thing winds down. They come as small as like 50 kVA. You can get them as big as 400 and 500 kVA. So, you know, that's something that's practical, is out there, and you can go to the store and buy, so to speak. Keep your eye on WK2.
Repeater, time out.
Kind of curious, Eric. Are there broadcast centers that will use kinetic energy, rotary kinetic energy storage, as a method of gliding through small period power outages? I think I vaguely remember you mentioning that at one time. And I do remember also that hydrogen and oxygen gas, when mixed to the right ratio, which is going to be two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen, as far as the chemical combination is concerned, not quite sure what that means in volume, if you do that, you get an extremely fast flame front that essentially explodes, and if you did it in a test tube, it'll sometimes explode the test tube. So when it was done in a chemistry class in high school, they added extra oxygen or extra hydrogen, I'm not sure which, but they added extra, which would not contribute to the reaction, to act as a cushion, an acoustic cushion, so as not to explode the test tube in which you're lighting it. It gives you a pop. I do remember that.
Extra hydrogen.
Oh, there you go, extra hydrogen. And because the flame front is so fast, as Wesley was telling us, you've got to change the timing. You've got to delay the timing because it burns so much faster than gasoline. I think I asked you, oh yes, are there broadcast centers that have used rotary kinetic energy to glide through momentary dropouts? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ, there are a lot of those types of UPSs. And they have them big enough that they will actually give you, you know, 300 kVA worth of energy for really good lengths of time, and the lengths of time run anywhere from like 3 to 7 minutes. So, they're basically dynamos with this huge, huge hunk of metal spinning around. And there's quite a few of them out there. HBO's got them out east. The networks use them. I almost bought one for our operation, but I chose batteries because I wanted to run for 45 minutes. So I've got 175 kVA that runs for about 45 minutes at full load, but we don't run full load. The thing runs for almost 2 hours. So, you know, there's enough time for the generators to start up, come up to speed, phase in, and kick in, which only really takes, you know, like 2 or 3 minutes. But because we're distributing programs to the network, we can't afford to be down for a millisecond. So that's what we do. And there are other people that use the smaller versions of the flywheels for line conditioning. Go ahead, Dick.
Interesting. Line conditioning. Rotary high Q circuit for line conditioning. Alrighty, let me go over to Brandon, who had a comment for us. Brandon, I'm not sure I got your call letters correctly. Kilo Delta 1 Tango Hotel Mike is what it sounded like, but I think I've got it wrong. So correct me on your call letters, Brandon, and tell us your comment. You got it, Brandon. K2RIW. My name is Dick. Sounds like Brandon has already left us. One of the next people on our list, I'm not sure I got the order right here, is Joe. And we haven't heard from you for a while, Joe. W-A-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Oh, guys. Guys, I'm still here. I just walked back in. I heard you saying my name. So I assumed you were talking to me, right?
Yes, I was, Brandon. I heard your call letters as Kilo Delta 1 Tango Hotel Mike. I think you've got to correct me. So give me the correct call letters and tell us your comment. You've got it, Brandon. My name is Dick.
My call is Kilo Bravo Tango Hotel Mike. And I just had a quick comment I wanted to let everyone know that Echo is now available on the iPhone. So give it a shot. I just downloaded it on my iTouch, and but I can't. It keeps telling me that my username, my password is wrong. Even though I know it's not, because I have the same one in my computer on the normal Echo. But I thought I'd just let everyone know.
Okay, you said Echo blank. There was a dropout there. That you've got on your iPhone and your iTouch.
Echo Link.
Echo Link. Aha. Alrighty. By the way, for those who are interested in digital devices and the impact it's having on our society, there is a beautiful NOVA that appeared this week, NOVA program on public broadcasting system, entitled Digital Nation. A little different than ordinary NOVAs. Most of the ordinary NOVAs run 1 hour. This one runs an hour and a half. And you can also go to pbs.org, I think it is, or pbs.com. But go to the website for PBS, and you can watch the whole program if it's not going to be repeated sometime in the future. It does give you an awful lot of the information about what impact it's having on our youth, both good and bad. So, Brandon, tell me, have you used the Echo Link, and are you using it now? And how do you find it? Kilo Bravo 1 Tango Hotel Mike, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, Brandon.
Okay, well, I heard about it just today on one of the other repeaters here in Connecticut. Someone was just talking about it. They were actually using it on their iPhone to connect into the repeater. But I downloaded it on my iTouch, and I don't know, I'm not really getting it to work because it's telling me that my username or password is wrong, or call sign or password. But I don't know. Maybe I have to port. I tried that. I don't know. someone can help me out.
Okay, so it sounds like it has a little bit of a setup difficulty in the beginning, and I'll bet you'll eventually figure it out. Eric, you're pretty... I'm going to load it now. I'll tell you in a minute. Yeah, Eric, you're pretty savvy on the modern pieces of hardware. I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I've heard of iPhone and iPad and whatever, but I have not heard of iTouch. So give me a couple of words, Eric. What is iTouch? K2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. I think he's referring to iPod. Okay. So you're downloading it right now, and you'll give us some words eventually as to what you think of it. And maybe you'll be able to help out Brandon set it up. Sounds like it would be kind of nice to have a portable device in your hand while you're on Echolink. I can see some great advantages of that. Let's see if Joe is now available. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Go right ahead, Joe. K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet. And how come you're not watching the Super Bowl? Let me check and see if, yes, we are coming through the 375 as well as the 85 machine. Let me give one more call to Joe. W-A-2 Romeo Yankee Yankee. K-2-R-I-W, Joe. Looks like Joe's not available. Some of the other people who signed in tonight, one of them was Ed, Kilo 2 Golf Juliet Echo. Go right ahead, Ed. Ed, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2GJE. Thank you, and a good evening to all. A very simple, sort of non-tech question. Probably all of us over the years have acquired a lot of adapter connectors, N to UHF, to BNC, etc. What has any of you used to clean them? After a while, they seem to turn black, and I was just curious. Over.
Yeah, when you say turn black, you're probably talking about the outside. Maybe you're talking about... you've got a high-quality brand that's got silver plating, and if you're in an environment that has a lot of sulfur gases in the atmosphere, silver sulfide building up on silverware gives you a blackish-looking substance. By the way, silver sulfide, the nice thing about silver plating is that the homely-looking silver sulfide, which causes you to polish your silverware, is not required. You don't have to polish silver-plated RF component because the silver sulfide is also an extremely good conductor. The only thing I would worry about when it comes to an adapter is pieces of black dirt or whatever inside of the adapter itself on the mating surfaces where the male and female center pin come together in particular. There I'd like to look at it under a microscope and clean it. And there's a case where you really want to look at it connector under a microscope. There is a 1 millimeter connector. This is off to one off to one side, Ed. This is different than your subject. But for the people who own a vector network analyzer, the Hewlett-Packard version that goes to 100 gigahertz, it has a connector on the front panel which is 1 millimeter in diameter. Very precision connector. And because that connector, if you damage it, requires a $5,000 replacement and recalibration of the instrument. You better be very careful when you mate that particular connector. So a person who's got any smarts would look at both ends of the connector under a microscope first before putting it together to make sure you're not grinding some great big piece of sand in there and damaging that very, very tiny precision connector. But for most of the type N and BNC and SMA and whatever connectors that we use, cleaning it out with an acid brush if you see some dust inside, blowing it out, cleaning it with various kinds of cleaning fluids, just to make sure there's no dirt on the mating connectors on the inside is all that counts. The outside can look homely as all heck, and it really doesn't matter. The RF doesn't flow on the outside of the connector. Let me drop because there's something else I want to tell you. and that is connectors and adapters. You tune across the 20-meter band any day of the week, and you'll find a significant number of people telling you that each UHF connector has got a quarter of a dB or half a dB of insertion loss. Type N connectors have some lower number of insertion loss. Adapters, they think, have got insertion losses like that. Almost all of that is hokum. When it comes to the insertion loss of dB per 100 feet that you get with, let's say, RG8 cable or your open wire line or whatever, the insertion loss there is primarily due to length. Yes, there's resistance along the length, and depending on what the dielectric material is, there's a small amount of loss in the dielectric material. But the loss is some number of decibels per 100 feet. And if you like, you can recalibrate it in decibels per foot or decibels per inch. Most of the adapters and connectors that we use are rarely more than 1 inch long. So unless they built the connector out of carbon granules instead of copper or silver plated or whatever, brass, unless they built it out of carbon granules, unless they put some lossy material in there like water, it's very difficult to get a significant loss from a properly operating connector or adapter. When you go to the manufacturer's specification sheet, he's going to have some number of decibels, usually as a functional frequency, there, just to make sure that there's some kind of a number that he knows he's going to do better than, and he's got a little bit of extra leeway in there to make sure you're not sending the connector back to him and you're claiming specification failure. But the numbers tend to be very small, numbers like 0.05, 0.02 decibels. Unless you're using some pretty sophisticated laboratory test equipment, a properly operating adapter is very difficult to see the insertion loss. If you have any doubt, you can do the test that I've done on a number of occasions. People claim that half a dB of loss for each UHF connector. I put a male-to-male UHF connector with a female-to-female adapter in between. Two male connectors, a female adapter in between, poured 700 watts at 432 megacycles through that connector for 10 solid minutes. At the end of the 10 minutes, the two connectors plus the adapter got slightly warm to the touch, approximately 1 watt of loss out of approximately 1 watt of loss out of 700 watts being applied. Approximately 1 watt of loss.
Dick?
Yes, Eric?
You timed out the IOLP.
Okay, I'll stand by.
Hang on, I'm going to reconnect it manually.
Now I'm transmitting via the... I'm going to stop listening to myself. I'm transmitting via my iPhone through EchoLink. So I've got it up and running, and it works. I'm very surprised. And it's actually a nice little program. Go ahead.
That's a good sign. Your audio changed in quality a little bit. It became a little bit higher in pitch, so to speak. But I'm hearing you through both the 8.5 and the 3.75 machine. And you're running EchoLink through your iPhone, I think you're saying. Or iPad, one or the other. iPhone. Sounds good, as far as communication quality is concerned. So, the last point I was making as I timed it out with my long-winded speech there was that 1 watt of loss out of 700, barely warm to the touch after 10 minutes of 700 watts at 432 megacycles, a UHF connector. You and I have often heard people say that, my brick amplifier has got a pair of UHF SO239s on them, and he changed it over to UG58s, chassis-mounted type N connectors, and he thinks he's picked up half a dB of improvement on each connector, and now his brick amplifier is going to be a dB louder. He believes that, but it's not true. So I wouldn't worry about the insertion loss, and when it comes to measuring very small amounts of loss, I think it's like 0.02 dB is what I just described for 1 watt out of 700. I'll do a quick calculation on the next transmission to figure that one out exactly. To measure such a small insertion loss with normal ham radio equipment is quite difficult. You go over to the calorimetry experiment of putting a known amount of power through it for a given amount of time and measure the temperature rise. So you do an indirect measurement of calorimetry to measure such small amounts of loss. So most likely, once you inspect it with a good magnifying glass or a microscope, if the inner dimensions of your adapter and connector is clean, most likely it's going to fly. Worry about whether or not some of the tangs are misaligned, if you know what I mean, Ed. K2GJE, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2GJE. Believe it or not, some of these connectors, which have been around, I think, over 50 years, are perfect outside. And I think the better ones, which maybe have some silver plating, have turned black. But as I look at a couple right now on the inside, the insides are clean. Also, if you use them once in a while, there's probably also some white on the inner parts. They have a tendency to possibly clean any corrosion in there. I do remember years ago, it goes back a long time, when I worked for Hazeltine, we had a piece of equipment where we were able to look at a length of coax with different connectors in it. We lost at the connectors, but we did see, like, impedance bounces. We were able to point out where the connectors were on the line, but there wasn't loss. There was just some kind of very, very slight impedance mismatch, I guess. I was just curious. So playing ham radio now for over 50 years, I'll turn it back to you, Walt.
Comment.
Wesley recognized. At Hazeltine, what you're describing, that machine that was able to see the connectors, is called a time domain reflectometer. Tektronix made one of the first ones. Hewlett-Packard made some very other good ones, as well as other companies. A time domain
VL repeater.
A time domain reflectometer is a kind of extremely brief radar. It puts out a kind of a pulse that's less than a nanosecond, probably a few picoseconds long, and sends it down the line. If the line was exactly 50 ohms, the signal would go down there and never come back. Every connector, every adapter, usually has somewhere within it a slight diameter change of center conductor or outer conductor, and or small piece of dielectric material to support things. So there are minor perturbations within every connector and every adapter. Even two perfect pieces of waveguide coming together, if you've got sensitive enough instrumentation, can see a slight impedance perturbation at the junction. And a perturbation and impedance on something that is a small fraction of a wavelength long, like most of our connectors and adapters, believe it or not, that does not represent a ohmic insertion loss, a power lossing insertion loss. It represents an extremely minor reflection coefficient, and if you're willing to readjust the transmitter impedance or the antenna receiving impedance, you can even correct for that in the steady state. So these are minor perturbations. The TDR is able to demonstrate to you. Beautiful instrument. I'm disappointed that most of the schools do not teach TDR theory. The school I went to, the school wasn't teaching it, but Tektronix came along to Pratt Institute way back in the dark ages and demonstrated their brand new time domain reflectometer to the students. They were doing it as a brag, and that's how I got my first introduction to it. Then I started working for Airborne Instruments Laboratory. That's always Pratt Institute that demonstrated. I worked for AIL, and they had a number of them, and I was the guy who made a lot of use out of them. So I then went on to take the time domain reflectometry technique and decided to apply it beyond the transmission line. when I was doing the testing at the World Largest